Thank you. Well, I was not expecting that. That's awesome. Thanks, you guys. And who knew that our band had that honky-tonk thing going on? That's so great. Thank you. You know, it just makes me think about the kind of creativity that we're inspiring here. And that's really what the Third Force is about. And I'll explain what that is in a little bit. boy, that's a hard act to follow. But I'll be fine. you know, I was thinking, I don't know if this has anything to do with anything that's going on today, but I was thinking about a conversation I had with our board president earlier this week where he was talking about that special event that's coming up. It's a panel with me speaking and a recovery speaker and also a Buddhist nun. And the way he wants to bill it is he wants each one of us to have a title, and he asked me if my title could be Irreverent Reverend. And I was like, sure, it's fine. I used to call myself all the time, and Nipun calls me that, actually. And then I said to him something like, you know, but the problem with Irreverent Reverend is that I'm not always sure that I can, you know, I feel pressure to be irreverent if that happens. And he waited a beat, and he said, I think you'll rise to the occasion. So if any irreverence comes out, we'll just know that I'm rising to the occasion. How's that, okay? So one of the thing that I'm speaking about this week is about our featured book, which is not actually the Buddhist book. I'm going to come back and visit that shortly. I didn't do it justice because there were other things going on, and it's a great book. But this is also a great book. It's called The Holy Trinity and the Law of Three, and it's written by Cynthia Bourgeau, and it's called it's about discovering the radical truth at the heart of Christianity. And her point is that Christianity, as it is now in many more traditional circles, many less mystical circles, is actually missing something that would make it incredible, awesome. So I'm going to let you speculate what that might be, but I'll tell you eventually what it is. The idea of the Holy Trinity and the Law of Three, the Law of Three is actually from an Armenian scholar who was an interfaith teacher, someone that my husband has studied a lot, and his name is George Gurdjieff. And he cultivated this idea of the third force, which is not necessarily original. There's threes in lots of different religions, but the third force is something that he cultivated, and then Cynthia Bourgeau, who did the Gurdjieff work for about 10 years, put it into language that is a little bit easier for someone like me to understand. Gurdjieff's writing is very, what would you call it? Very
complex,
yes. So anyway, Cynthia Bourgeau talks about the third force, and she says that it is another way of describing the Christian Trinity. You know, when I learned the Christian Trinity, how many of you were raised learning the Christian Trinity? Probably a lot of you, yeah. So I learned that it was the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost. I thought that the Father and the Son were men, and the Holy Ghost was who knows what. Nobody really knew what the Holy Ghost was. Cynthia Bourgeau is saying that it's a template. It's a template that can be used that is actually the drive shaft of Christianity, and it's a template of change and transformation and moving into a deeper relationship with the wholeness of all that is. Because in this teaching and in other mystical teachings, we teach that Christ is not limited to one person, but that Christ is the perception of wholeness. Christ is the perception of oneness. And Ernest Holmes, our founder, said that there is nothing to be healed, only wholeness to be revealed. So when we are in alignment with Christ, with the Christ consciousness, we call it, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're in alignment with Jesus the man, but we are in alignment with the Christ consciousness, meaning that we are seeing the world as whole. And because that is so, and because I believe that Jesus was a mystical teacher, I believe that the whole Gospels, all of them, the ones that made the cut, the ones that didn't make the cut, that they are all a hymn to wholeness. And all of the epistles, all of the letters, and all of the other books in the New Testament, those are all an echo of that hymn to wholeness. But we don't always see it that way, do we? Or we may have been taught that it's not that way. In the past, some of us may have had spiritual experiences where Christianity feels more like brokenness and saying what is wrong with us and how we're going to go to hell if we don't follow certain rules, when really it is just the opposite. It is a hymn to wholeness. And that's where the third force comes in. So I'm going to read her definition of what she says the Trinity is and the third force. She uses those two, or the law of three. She uses those two terms interchangeably. She says the Trinity is a process that knows how nothing becomes something. Beautiful. The Trinity reveals the knowledge of how God, the hidden, unmanifest, inaccessible light, becomes accessible light, manifesting and creating love, and how love in turn becomes the drive shaft of all creation, the steering mechanism of all creation, bringing all things to their fullness. This is my favorite part. Bringing all things to their fullness, not by escaping createdness, but by consummating createdness. And what that means is that spiritual people often see, even in this path, I've noticed, spiritual people often see that the way to spirituality is through ascent only, that we need to rise up and we need to have our mind meet God's mind. And she's saying that it's not only rising up, it is the path of descent as well. It is both. And it is the process that swirls and intertwines in those two. However do we put that into practical terms? Something that we can live with, something that we can actually practice, something that we can use that will strengthen us and open our eyes to perceive more of the reality of wholeness, the absolute reality. You know, Dr. Ernest Holmes, who was the founder of this religion, said, "There is a power for good, and we can use it." And he might as well have said, "There is a law of three, and we can use it too." We can use that. It's not only the way that spirit creates, it's the way that we create as well. And so the way she explains the law of three and the way I explain it, and I'm still learning, by the way. I'm hardly an expert, but I'm still learning. She explains that there is an affirming factor and a denying factor, and then there is a reconciling factor. The affirming factor wants to get something done. The denying factor gets in the way of that thing getting done. The two of them meet and are pressing up against each other, and because it is a binary system, they're pressing up against each other, so it is ultimately stable. But then a third comes in, and the third is like a reconciler or a mediator or a neutralizer, and through the presence of the third, something new is born, a fourth is born. So the obvious example that she gives is sperm, egg, sexual activity, and child. And I use that example that the child is the fourth because if it's a true fourth, then the fourth can go on and create new laws of three in its own life, right? One of the laws of three that I'm very cognizant of because I'm wearing these hearts. Everybody's making fun of my hearts. I just keep collecting them here. We're getting more from India, by the way. We gave a whole bunch away a couple weekends ago, and we're getting more. But anyway, this was a law of three incident where people were, there was a situation in the slums of India where there were women living in poverty, men and women living in poverty. The men were drinking the money away, and there was a patriarchy, so the women were not allowed to work outside of the home. And then the third came in. The third force was Wisdom Crafts, this organization that's run by our friend Nipun Mehta. And they came in and they said, "We're going to give women an opportunity to work in the home. They are going to make these hearts, and they're going to send them all over the world on a gift economy basis." And so that was the third force coming in. The hearts are the fourth. And if you've ever given away one of your hearts that you may have collected at the center, often when you give a heart, it has a life of its own, and it changes that person's life in a new way. A new process starts. So that's a practical example of how the third force works. But what's this part about holding your nose? The thing that has no song. All I can think of is like, ding, 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 like that. Yeah. Holding your nose. Everybody. Yeah, good job. Yeah. He's been practicing, yeah. He does that, and I practice at home. Okay. So we live in the fast lane, people, okay? Where was I? Okay, holding your nose. So what happens sometimes with spiritual people, and even in this church, you know, when I ask, is it this or that, and people say yes, we all say yes is a really good thing, and you're supposed to say yes to your opportunities, and you're supposed to say yes to your life, but what if really sometimes you're supposed to say no? I have found sometimes in working with the third force that sometimes I have to be the voice for no, and no is essential at times. And let me read you a quote from her that may explain what that means in a really clear way, I hope. Okay. "All three forces are equally important, participating in the unfolding of a new arising. So that's the affirming force, the yes, the denying force, the no, and the reconciling force. Denying, or second force, is never an obstacle to be overcome, but always a legitimate and essential component of the new manifestation. In and of the self, this realization brings a radically new orientation to problem solving. The enemy is never the enemy, but a necessary part of the givens in any situation. And solutions will never work that have as their goal the elimination of the second force. Resistance is an indispensable ingredient in forward motion. Does that sound a little foreign to the way that we normally think of things? It does, because often when we have a first force that we're wanting something to accomplish and something gets in our way, we make that thing bad and we want to get rid of it, right? It happens personally, it happens in relationships, it happens inside, it happens politically, it happens all the time that we're trying to push away this thing that feels like resistance. And when we do that, in fact, we are resisting resistance and we make it stronger. Because if you push harder, what is this side going to do? It's going to push back harder. But what if something else could be done? I'm going to tell you an example of somebody that I think is doing it wrong. It's somebody in a book. And then I'll talk about a situation that happened where I think the people involved, me, did it really well. I'm the humblest person I know. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. So, in order to tell this story, I actually had to hold my nose a little bit, okay? Because it's about Dr. Seuss. And some of you may know that Dr. Seuss has become a controversial figure at the moment. You know, Dr. Seuss was read for years and years and years and years and years, and all of a sudden people started looking at some of his drawings and saying, oh, some of these are a little questionable. They're a little bit racially stereotyping and whatnot. And so there was kind of this anti-Dr. Seuss thing going on. And I did a lot of research on it because even though I'm the irreverent reverend, I do try and be respectful, so I wanted to know if there really was something awful going on with Dr. Seuss. And really, the result that I got from the research that I did was that Dr. Seuss was human. Theodore Geisel was human, that he had some darkness in his past, and that he had some light in his past, and he had some light, probably some darkness in the future, but he also had a lot of light in his writing. You know, if you ever read the Star-Bellied Sneetches, right? That clearly is a story about how we may have external differences, sneetches, or stars upon ours, right? Stars on our belly, but underneath we're all the same. I read that to theater students every year, and actually the kids can come up with that conclusion as well, that underneath all of the outward trappings and all of the things that we talk about to make ourselves seem separate or better than or worse than, underneath we're really all the same. The story that I'm going to talk about is the Zax. Do you know the Zax? Okay, I'll tell you what it is in case you don't know it. But it's a beautiful little ethical morality play about what happens when you're both holding your yes or your no too hard. And just without telling the whole story, the north going Zax is going this way. Is that north? This way, okay. No? This way? How is that north? Now she's pointing that way. I don't, whatever. Let's pretend that way. Everybody has, see how you are? See? Everybody has a different opinion about what north is. Let's just pretend that north is this way, okay? Okay, even though it's not. Okay, the north going Zax is going this way, the south going Zax is going this way, and they meet up against each other and they stop in their tracks. And each of them tries to persuade the other one to move in a not a very nice way, in a very aggressive way. And they have very strong reasons why this one has to go south and this one has to go north. This one learned how to go south in south-going school as a boy. And this one never takes a step to the right or to the left. And that, so that's the gist of the story. They stay there, and they're faced up against each other, and neither one of them will move. They both refuse to move. They both are holding their yeses and their noes without any room for the third force to come in. And what happens is that the whole world grows up around them, but they miss it because they're engaged and embroiled in this conflict. They're not looking for the things that Bill talked about in his balloon message. Oh, there it is. They're not looking for the good, or they're not looking for a possibility, a different possibility. So they're stuck there, okay? We're going to leave them stuck there for a few minutes, and I'll tell you how, if I was their minister, how I might have suggested that they use the third force. But we'll get to that in a minute. I want to talk about a time when I felt like the third force worked very successfully because both people involved in the appearance of a conflict were being very conscious. And this is something that happened when I was in India. As you know, I went to India in January, and what some of you may not know, but some of you do know, is that I was carrying around probably about 100 prayer requests from people in the congregation, written on purple pieces of paper, and I was carrying them to every shrine that we went to, Muslim shrines, Shiva, Ganesh, all kinds of shrines. I carried them to the Gandhi ashram. I carried them on the property where we were staying, which was incredibly beautiful. There were lots of Buddha statues there. There was a Kuan Yin. And I would carry these prayer requests, and I would just pray for them in front of all of these shrines. So I'm doing my thing. I'm carrying the congregation's prayer request around, and I started wondering, I wonder if there's a Jesus here. And I looked all over, and I didn't see any Jesus. There was a St. Francis, but something in me was saying, you should pray for these prayer requests in front of a Jesus. And so, a statue of Jesus. And we didn't go to any Christian churches or temples or anything like that. So I decided to ask the person, the proprietor of the place, who I've spoken about before. His name is Jayesh Bhai, and he's the son of Ishwar Patel, who changed the face of untouchability in the city where we were staying in and changed millions and millions of lives. And Jayesh has this beautiful place that is so well appointed, that has every single name, room is named, every single seat cushion is named, every path is named, something like love or compassion or what have you, and there's no Jesus. And he's also kind of a local celebrity, you know, people know him for his greatness and his goodness, and I was saying to myself, oh, Bonnie, you're such an American, you're going to go up to this guy and tell him what's wrong with this place when it's perfect, when it's paradise, what is wrong with you? You know, it felt a little bit like, I'm going to riff on paraphrase Shirley Valentine, which is a beautiful play if you haven't seen it, paraphrase on Shirley Valentine a bit, where it's something like, you know, it was like I was at the Last Supper, and Jesus says, take this bread, for it is my body. Let me break it. Eat of it. It is my body. And I was there, how many carbs does that have? I can't eat if it has too many carbs. What else have you got? Wine? No, I don't drink either. So that's what I felt like when I was thinking, oh my God, something within you is telling you that you need to talk to Jayesh Bhai about Jesus. Holy crap, I'm not that like Bible-thumping fundamentalist or anything. You know, and I was afraid about what he might think, actually. So sometimes it's hard to see what is the yes or the no. What I see is this is a yes, is that he had the right to have his retreat center be exactly what he wanted, and I was saying no to that. I was saying, no, I think we need a Jesus here too. And it felt really uncomfortable. So I decided I wasn't going to do it. But I did throw in a word to God, and I said, God, if I'm supposed to do this, please make it really clear. And then, stupid God. I end up in this room alone with Jayesh Bhai, who doesn't speak English very well, and Nipun, who translates. And I'm like, oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm supposed to say something about this. So I did, and I said it very kindly, and I just said, you know, I just have this urge. I have this urge to pray these prayer requests in front of Jesus, and it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with your place. I'm just feeling this thing. And I could feel him get a little defensive, him feeling like maybe she thinks I don't like Jesus. And he was telling me how he prayed, and he prayed that he could have one drop of the compassion of Jesus in his soul. And I'm like, I think you got that covered. I think Jesus gave you more than one drop, by the way. But you know, there was this a little bit of tension before us, and then I think the third force came in when he said to me, he stopped and he breathed and he said to me, you know what? I think you are here to draw in the energy of Jesus. We've been wanting a Jesus. And you are here with this question and also with all of the Teze chants. Teze is primarily a Christian practice. With the Teze chants that, by the way, I was singing with a Muslim, a Hindu, a tantric yoga teacher, a German Protestant, somebody else, I think another Hindu. and you know, he's saying all of those things are drawing in the presence of Jesus, and when he is supposed to show up, he will. And everything relaxed, and I completely forgot about it until the last day. The last day I was there, Jayesh Bhai called me over, and And he brought me over to a peace pole, which is like something we have out there that has "May peace prevail on earth" in every language. And he brought me over there, and there was something wrapped in black there, and he said, "Kneel down and put your hands on it," and I did. And then he said, "Open it," and it was Jesus, and it was Jesus on a crucifix, which is not exactly what I was asking for, but it was okay, go with this. And then he had me pick it up, and he said, "We're going to walk around the property, and Jesus is going to tell us where he wants to go." And so we did, and we walked into the meditation hut where I was, where I'd been singing the Teze chants with these people of all faiths, and Jayesh Bhai said, "There's the spot," and he put it up there. And what's really incredible to me is that afterwards, Nipun, of course, finds out about everything, and he found out about that story, and he came to me and he said, you don't know how beautiful that really is, because just a month ago, Jayesh decided that he was going to take down the picture that was there, and it was a picture of his father, Ishwar Patel. And in India, we often use Ishwar, we shorten it to Ishwa, which is another way that we say Jesus. And so that was there. But wait, it gets even better. It gets even better. So 2 months later, we're here in this center on Good Friday, we're stitching hearts. Right? We're stitching hearts that are coming from Wisdom Crafts from India. We are circulating that love. And in the meantime, back in India the next day, because it's the next day there, there's my friend Meghna, who is the heart of the hearts. She's the one who runs that whole program. She was there doing a retreat in that same center where I was staying. And she had this woman there who was Christian, and this Christian woman was saying, "What am I doing in this Hindu retreat center on Good Friday? What's going on? What, I don't know. I'm not sure if this is right." And so she decided to walk around and meditate on the property, and she walked into the meditation hut, and there was Jesus. And she said, "I know I'm in the right place now." And her life was changed because of it. So do you see how the third force can work? Do you see how the past and the future are one? I mean, Jayesh thought that I was calling in the Jesus, but maybe that woman was calling in the Jesus, and she spoke to me, and I spoke to him. Or maybe Jesus just plain old wanted to climb up on that thing and be there. Who knows? Like that. Just like very Monty Python, right? Yeah. But... the irreverent reverend. Yeah. But that's how it works, and that's how it can work, and it's not limited to me. You know, it's not limited to any of us. It's an ever-present reality of reconciliation, of thirdness that wants to happen in the world, but we are trapped in the illusion of thinking that there is a binary system going on, that there is either or, when really it is yes and or no and. Right? And one of the hardest things that we need to learn how to do is to learn how to hold our nose. That we hold our nose gently with compassion for the other side, and we hold our no, knowing that it is not absolute reality, that it is only our opinion, right? And that the other no, the other yes, has the right to their opinion as well. You know, I remember when Timber Hawkeye was here last. He's coming again, by the way, in the end of June, which is cool, yes. And he said that this was one of the few churches where he felt like he could say, you know, people on the other side of the world may think it completely different from you, and they're right too. Just as you're right, they're right too. He said he gets such flack from saying that because people are like, "Are you kidding me? That person over there is wrong," you know? But to them, in the world of the relative, we really believe that our opinion is absolute truth, and that's the piece that we get to let go of. We get to lighten it. We get to hold it a little less with a white-knuckled grip and allow something greater to come in, and that something greater is the third force, which is the reconciler, right? As I've quoted many times before, George Gurdjieff used to say, "Argument is insane. There is only the objective exchange of subjective opinions." So look, for just a moment, look at what you're clinging to. What are you naming wrong? And maybe there's a little wiggle room where you can loosen your grip on it just a little bit and allow something greater than you, that thing that has the greater vision, to see, not solve it right now, not come up with an epic solution for it, but just to see if there's a little spaciousness in what you're holding. And I promise you, if you keep practicing that, your life will unfold. And if we all keep practicing that, the life of the planet will unfold in a new and surprising and wonderful way, where we make wholeness a priority, where we pray for wholeness, where we make reconciliation a priority, where we practice reconciliation. And the natural outcome of wholeness and reconciliation is kindness, acts of kindness. It all works together. It all fits together beautifully. So let's go back to those Zacks. The Zacks that are facing each other, right? They're facing each other, they're at an impasse. They're not gonna step to the right or to the left, and they have no solution. The city grows up all around them because they have no solution. They are so convinced that there is no solution because I'm right and you're wrong, or you're right and I'm wrong, or whatever. I think I said that wrong. But anyway, I'm right and you're wrong is what they're both saying, right? What if I was their minister and I said, can you relax for a moment and allow the creative force of the universe that wants to reconcile pour through you and give you something? And it may or may not involve a compromise. Often with the third force, a compromise is not good enough. It has to be a true win. And if you're truly committed to not stepping to the right or stepping to the left, there may be a way for you. So let's say the Zacks are standing like this. What if one of them did a little plié and the other one crawled through his legs? Right? What if one of them squatted down like this and the other one leapfrogged over him? Right? Or what if their whole beings became so filled with light that they were able to just pass through each other in a state of wholeness? My friends, this is what I want for you. This is what I want for our center. I want us to be a center of reconciliation. Annette, we got to change the sign. Sorry. I'm kidding. Love is part of reconciliation. I want us to be a center of reconciliation where we are not the great exception, but the great example. The great example that shows that dilemma and conflict and opposition can be held in something greater than what we've learned about it in the past. Amen. Yeah. And so it is. I'm done. Thank you. Thank you. All right. That was a quick ending, but it's getting late. I'm kind of out of time. Okay. Alrighty, here we go. Mm.